Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order at 8:03 a.m. on Thursday, February 27th. Joining me today, we have Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Tallarico, Representative Lincoln, and myself, Co-Chair Parrish. Our staff this morning are Lori Rowland from House Records, Madison Truitt on teleconference, and Patrick Courtnage, my committee aide. Members, would you please silence your electronic devices? We do have a quorum to conduct business. And today we have two items on the agenda, a presentation from Dr. Rosita Worrell, the Sealaska Heritage Institute president, and a House Joint Resolution 30, urge U.S. support of refugees. And on that point, we're just going to be picking up the zero fiscal note, which was previously connected to the bill. But first, Dr. Worrell, if you'd please come forward with any of your staff that you'd like, introduce yourself with your name and affiliation, and begin your presentation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs, and thank you, honorable members of the committee. I'm very pleased to be here. I am Rosita Worrell, the president of the Sealaska Heritage Institute, and I have with me my executive assistant, Ralphinia Dibdol. I knew her as by her grandmother's name. Anyway, first of all, if I could just say, I truly appreciate, you know, all of the work that you have to do. I know these are difficult and trying times for all of us, but I have to echo what I read about Senator Sullivan saying that I still believe that we have a great future before us, this state of Alaska, and I think I've lived long enough to see the ups and downs in this state, and so I have absolutely utmost confidence, you know, that we are going to prevail and we are going to continue to make Alaska a greater state. And I know that you are responsible for leading us into the future, and I'm truly aware of the difficulties you have, the differences of opinion, but I admire you all because I know I myself could never do it. I would be so afraid to do it. So I know that it really is something that we have to continue to teach our children, that we have to do public service, that public service is critical to our development as a society. So I just wanted to begin by thanking you for doing that, and then also thanking you for taking the time to hear our presentation. I had asked Mr. Co-Chair how long I had, and I told him that I'm capable of doing six-hour lectures, but I won't subject you to that. I do have a presentation. I want to share with you some of the work that we're doing at Sealaska Heritage Institute, and also share with you our vision as to what we can do from the heritage and in the arts to help, you know, our state develop. In honor of my grandparents and in love for my children, I am obligated by our cultural protocols to introduce myself to you. Yadetlatsak kakahani yuchat duasak jak na ayachat shangu kwedi ayachat kaudli hit ayachat. My name is Yadetlatsak. It's an ancient name that's been passed down for thousands and thousands of years. My ceremonial name is Kahani, and it means woman who stands in the place of a man. And I will tell you that I've shared that definition with many of my colleagues on the Sealaska Board of Directors, who sometimes seem to forget. I'm Tlingit. I'm an eagle from the Shangu Kwedi clan, or the Thunderbird clan. And I am from the House Lord from the Sun in Klukwan, and I'm very proud to be a child and grandchild of the Thukalkhadi or the Sockeye clan. If I may begin now, through all of human spirit, art has been known for its spiritual and cultural values and its aesthetic values. But today, we also know, we are increasingly aware, that it also has economic potential. if we just look at Southeast Alaska, we see that arts is a $58 million industry. Artists earned $30 million in 2013. 25% of Southeast artists identify as Native artists. In rural Southeast communities, 75 to 100% identify as Native artists. On a statewide level, we see that the Alaska Arts is over $505 million. And we have over 17,000 Alaskans who work in the arts and creative industries. The economic potential of Northwest Coast and Alaska Native art is underutilized. Potential can be realized by promoting Southeast Alaska and Juneau as the Northwest Coast arts capital and the economic engine for the region and the state. Northwest Coast art is an internationally and recognized and in high demand. I don't know if you had an opportunity to see the Olympics where we saw some of our art made by a Tlingit artist worn by some of the athletes. I just learned this morning that Alyssa London, who was Miss Alaska and who wore a ceremonial robe with a design on it, had the highest viewing in the state of Alaska. I mean, that's phenomenal that people are beginning to see our art. And I mean, it's pretty significant because it stands, other states, you know, their streaming might be those games at NBA or whatever games those are. So it really has, our art is really getting out there. We've seen it at, you know, at the Olympics. We've seen it nationally. Even at the Academy Awards, we see that some of our designers are using their clothing, Northwest Coast art clothing is being used. So we see that not only is Northwest Coast art gaining in recognition, but also Alaska Native art in general. Now, I just want to tell you a little bit about Northwest Coast art. Those of us who have grown up here in Alaska, we're so accustomed to seeing Northwest Coast art that we don't really think about its significance. What is the meaning of Northwest Coast art? Well, Northwest Coast art, I know, is acclaimed throughout the world as a uniquely distinctive form of design and aesthetics. Northwest Coast art evolved over a several thousand year period in the rich and complex indigenous societies of the Pacific Northwest of North America. It's based on an ancient form line and design principles and spatial relationships not seen anywhere else in the world. It also has the capacity for further modification. We actually have nominated and are advancing a resolution through Congress to designate Northwest Coast art as a national treasure in the same way that jazz and the blues are designated as national treasures. Unfortunately, it won't bring us any funds, but it does have the capacity to support us in our effort. So we have our delegation, along with Senator Cantwell, who are moving that initiative. Northwest Coast art also plays a significant role in maintaining the cultural diversity of the nation and the cultural survival of the region's indigenous populations. You heard me introduce myself as an eagle, so I wear the eagle moiety crest. I am from the Thunderbird clan, and so I will wear jewelry that identifies me as a Thunderbird. I'm also from the House Lord, from the Sun, and so you will see that design on our sacred art. And we do make a distinction between secular and sacred art. This is a topic that has become really significant, particularly in Juneau in the last week, and we are hoping that we're going to be able to address it in a very positive way. But it has elevated the whole issue of intellectual property, cultural appropriation, all surrounding art. Our art represents a major attraction for visitors and provides untold sustainable, and I want to use that word and emphasize the word sustainable social and economic benefit to the region and the state. Northwest Coast Arts can become another economic engine modeled after the Santa Fe Indian Market. The Santa Fe Indian Market began 95 years ago to promote tourism. Today, it brings in 120 visitors, spending more than $80 million on arts and services over a four-day period. Over 900 Native artists from 200 tribes report earnings of a third to one-half of their annual income. Imagine, just imagine what we can do with more than 1 million people coming to Juneau during the summer months, and as the community ranking the sixth in the nation for our creative vitality. I know a lot of people just haven't thought a whole lot about that, but can you imagine that in the country we are ranked as the sixth in creative vitality? I mean, Washington, D.C. is behind us. So we really have the potential to do something with our arts here in this state. And if we could just look at Celebration, I don't know if any of you have had an opportunity to attend Celebration. It's something that we host every 2 years, and we note that we have over 5,000 participants who attend Celebration over a four-day period. We had the McDowell Group do a study for us in 2012, and we calculated that our estimated total economic impact was $2.2 million, and that was when our Celebration was only at a three-day period. It's now been extended to a four-day period and kind of flowing over to a five-day period. So we think that that number has increased. Our artists have reported up to $30,000 in sale over a four-day period at the Native Artist Market during Celebration. I will tell you that initially we had our arts market at the Armory, what is now known as Jack, but we moved it down to the Sea Alaska Plaza. And the first time we moved it down there, some of our artists sold out the very first day. And this was without any kind of marketing efforts, you know, for the Native Artist Market. And so it's become very popular with tourists and other visitors who are coming to Juneau. Celebration remains a growing attraction. In this coming year, in June, we will have different art groups. Two of them are coming from Santa Fe. They're organized groups of people who are being led by scholars. We also have the board of directors or board of trustees from the Peabody Essex Museum, the Peabody Essex Museum being a very prestigious national museum known for its focus on the arts. We also have a number of scholars who are coming from Oxford to study dance, others who are coming to study identity. So it's become an attraction for multiple reasons. We have embarked on a campaign to establish Juneau as the Northwest Coast Art Capital to promote arts throughout the region. We began our initiative with the construction of the Walter Soboloff Building, which itself is a piece, a work of art. We believe that this vision can be achieved with the collective action and support of federal, state, tribal, and local governments, businesses, and private organizations. Our training programs include, we have a robust training program at the Lemon Creek Correctional Center, and we are teaching many individuals out there how to earn an income. When we first started that program, I was so excited, you know, to see some of our guys coming out after leaving Lemon Creek. And we'd be so happy, but then we would see sometimes they would fall. Mm-hmm. And so we felt it was really important for us to try to develop a transitional program for them, and we have done that. We are starting that. It's just in its infancy, but we're beginning to see the results of that transition housing or arts program for those inmates who are leaving Lemon Creek and then starting to do training at Gadjahit, which is a facility that is owned by the Tlingit and Haida Housing Authority. And this is one of the things that we like to do is partnerships. We have partnerships with many different entities, and this one was particularly beneficial in that it provided a space to train our inmates who are coming from Lemon Creek. And then more recently, we had a graduate from that program who is now working as an artist in residence at the Walter Soboloff building. We do have an artist in residence room there. We also have a sustainable arts project, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about that. We hold workshops throughout the region and actually throughout the state. We've had invitations to hold other workshops in different parts of the states, and we were working with different regions to try to implement those programs there. We also spend a lot of time educating the public. And I know that our work is going to even increase more because of this incident that happened in Juneau over cultural appropriation. But we are working together with Jack, and we think that we're gonna address this issue in a very positive way. We are also expanding our Northwest Coast art market. We are integrating Northwest Coast art into public places. We, as I noted, are working to designate Northwest Coast art as a national treasure. We also expand our work through collaborations. Collaborations, as I mentioned, collaborations and formal partnerships are really significant to SHI's work. And so currently we have a three-way partnership with the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, and also with the University of Alaska Southeast, where a arts program is being developed. And we are, you know, very appreciative that the university, even in these difficult times, are still, you know, moving forward with establishing a Northwest Coast arts program. But we have also been successful in seeking other grants that are supporting the efforts of the University of Alaska Southeast in the arts programs. We are also integrating our visual and performing arts in elementary and secondary schools throughout the regions. And we are actually teaching teachers about Northwest Coast art, teaching them the cultural dimensions of them. Most of them are non-native teachers, and so we are integrating them into our school. We are developing a program right now for our high school students to receive credit, credit that they could also be applied at the university program. So it is a very strong partnership where students can go through, begin at the elementary and secondary level, and then transition into the University of Alaska Southeast. And then with our partnership with IAI, the Institute of American Indian Arts, they can go on to study other arts. And I'm telling you, I really think this is a great program. I've seen the results of it with some of our native students who are now doing, you know, fantastic art and moving very quickly to their master status level. I mentioned to you that we also have a sustainable arts program. And the concept between sustainable arts is to use natural resources that our people in rural communities, in native communities, once used to make native arts. We started off with basketry, with spruce root. We had a demonstration project in Huna. Spruce root basketry was something that was becoming extinct. We hired the great Dolores Churchill, who is Haida, but she taught our people and reintroduced spruce root basketry in Huna through one of our programs. We now have over 20 artists who are weaving baskets, and their products sell anywhere from $500 to $1,500 for a spruce root woven hat. And so they're selling largely through the Icy Strait facility there, and we are hoping to expand this program into other communities. And actually, now I think we're working with National Geographic to teach here in Juneau spruce root basketry, and also in Yakutat. In 2012, the state of Alaska appropriated us Sea Alaska Heritage funds to do our sustainable arts and focusing on sea mammal. And we chose to focus on sea otter because not only is it it's a rich art, the art I'm wearing a sea otter vest right now. It's a highly coveted fur. It at one point in time it really drove the economy, the historical economy, with the export of sea otter to China. So we thought we could build on that and take care of a problem that we know that we all have with sea otter populations in Southeast Alaska. And it was supposedly a three-year program. Unfortunately, at that point in time, the state began to have its fiscal problems and our funding, we lost our funding. But during those two years, we were able to begin to train new artists create.
At this time, I'd like to mention that at 9:05, we're joined by Representative Drummond, and Representative Lincoln has a question for you.
Okay. That's all right. I just had a question. Was it $250 a year or $250 over 2 years?
It was $250 over 2 years.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you again, Dr. Worrell. You may resume.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, we saw that the project had a significant impact not only in training new artists. We saw some of our artists earning up to $35,000 to $50,000 from the production of sea otter products. But we also saw that it had an impact on the population, which we know is quite abundant at this point in time. So in the two-year period, we harvested over 500 sea otter. And we don't have scientific data to demonstrate the positive impacts, but we do have anecdotal evidence that shows that in the Sitka area that the abalone began to return. So if you could look at that chart, you could see, you know, the impacts that we were able to have as a result of this appropriation from the state of Alaska. We believe that in the long term that our sustainable arts project can be expanded to include both sea and terrestrial wildlife throughout Alaska. When we first started our project, we heard, you know, that there were problems in the interior with the fur industry, and we saw that as a marketing problem. And so we began with that part of this money that we received from the state. We attended the Safari Club, their meetings in, I think it was in Las Vegas. And I will tell you that people loved our art, loved our fur. But we did learn that there were some things that we needed to do to improve the quality of our products. And had we been allowed to continue that project, that would have been our next step. I will say that we are continuing to look for funding to continue this sustainable arts project. And I'll tell you a little bit about that in a moment. But we believe that we have the capacity, you know, to expand this particular industry even further. We know that it could provide significant benefits to our artists while simultaneously lessening the negative economic impacts of sea otter predation on subsistence and commercial fisheries. Another project that we embarked on, I saw it was in the paper, and I said, on our Native Artist Park. And our Native Artist Park we are envisioning as a gateway to Alaska Native art. We are expanding our art programs statewide. We just recently had a statewide meeting of Alaska Native artists to begin planning this expansion. And this is a park that would be built on the Sea Alaska parking lot. We would put the parking lot below ground, and on the surface we would build a large replica of a clan house that would be used as a carving shed. And we would then also put monumental art from all of the different regions, whether it be whalebone from the Arctic, kayaks from the Aleuts. We're looking for monumental art to be put on the plaza. Whenever we do sales of other Native art. We also feel it's incumbent on us to educate the public about the Native peoples. And so, for example, we acquired the Alaska Native Arts Foundation's their inventory, and it contained a lot of Inupiat, Yupik, and Athabascan art pieces. So we immediately mounted an Alaska Native Arts mask exhibits to do the other part, which we see as part of our work, and that is educating the public about Alaska Native cultures and society. I have to tell you that we did submit a $500,000 capital request to you. I know it's difficult, but we want to put it on the table for your consideration. We were thankful for the money that the state did appropriate for the Walter Soboloff building, and I will tell you that we were able to leverage that into that $20 million facility that we now have that is supporting nearly 40 people in employment. We support over 100 artists or more, both Native and non-Native, through the sales in our retail shop. Plus, we are hosting a lot of educational summits, your language summit. So it's become a center for education, for cultural teachings, and now art teachings. And so we are hoping that we're going to be able to construct this Native Artist Park. We are meeting with our delegation. We're watching very closely the infrastructure project. It is, Senator Murkowski assures us that it is, she didn't say number one, but she said pretty close to the top on the list. So we are hopeful, you know, that we are going to move forward on that. We're actually meeting with the commissioner or the deputy commissioner of commerce looking at alternative funding mechanisms through the state. But we're very intent, you know, on moving this forward. We've met with John Binkley with the Alaska Cruise Industry. They're very supportive of us in promoting the arts on one of the largest ship that will launch this spring. It'll be filled with Northwest Coast art. So he's promised to help us in many different ways. He asked us if we could produce 600 paddles. I said yes, but my staff told me we don't have the capacity to do that yet, but we are going to gear up to provide that kind of supply, you know, to the tourist industry. Our sister organization, the Tlingit and Haida Cultural Immersion Park, is also, if I may, I show you some of the products, you know, in addition to my vest. We've made in our Sustainable Arts Project. And so we have two models, and these were examples that we brought to the Safari Club. They actually love the sea otter. And I think they liked our ladies, too. And I will tell you, a coat like this sells for about $2,000. The hat itself is about $500. The scarf around the neck is about $250, $300. And so you see we're able to use all kinds of marine life. We have seal and used along together with the sea otter. We really think this has potential. I might ask you if you have any influence with the governor. We've asked if we could accompany the governor on his trade mission to China. Mm-hmm. We know that the Chinese love sea otter. And we're looking at ways that we might be able to meet some of their needs. Our hope would be that perhaps they could send over some of their craftspeople to show us the kind of things that they like with sea otter, and then maybe help us in some of the training in the same way that we were going to be working with other artisans with using other kinds of fur. So I think that market really has the potential to grow and take care of a very serious problem that we have. And I might note that we have asked our congressional delegation to support us in this effort. We reported on the state's contribution to us. We do have an appropriation request in Congress now to support our Alaska Native Arts Organization, the Native Artist Park. And we asked, and also to fund the educational programs that we have with the University of Alaska and also the IAI. We've asked for an increase this year to re-implement our sustainable arts project. We met with the legislative director. He was very excited about it, and he's asked us to get support from other entities saying that they view it as a viable project. So that's something that we might be able to ask you. I mentioned that our Tlingit and Haida also has a cultural immersion park out at Thane. They are busy working on that. And again, this is going to be another effort to stimulate arts and cultural expansion in our Juneau area. So we have multiple initiatives that we need to pursue. First of all, arts has to be recognized as an industry. And we need to appropriate legislation that authorizes art training as eligible for both state and federal employment funding. And right now we are precluded because arts does not lead to a job, but it does lead to an opportunity to increase revenues for individual artists. We are going to ask for letters of support to our congressional delegation supporting SHI as an Alaska Native Arts Organization and the Native Artist Park as a shovel-ready project. The governor did already designate Sea Alaska Heritage Institute as a Native Arts Organization, as is required under the American Indian and Alaska Native and Native Hawaiian Arts and Culture Act. So that is, we are designated, and so we do have an initial appropriation currently, you know, before Congress. We would also ask that the state of Alaska support the enforcement of the Indian Arts and Crafts Act. It's really a consumer protection act that prohibits the non-representation of non-produced non-native art as native art. We would like to have further expansion of art programs and art training programs, including mentorships, internships, fellowship programs for emerging artists. We'd also like to amend the 1% for the art program to require Alaskan Artist Commission of these products. And I know that our statutes elsewhere, you know, really support Alaska-made products. And I think that Alaskan art should also be considered in that same category. We are asking for support for the University of Alaska art program, and we want to see, you know, display of native art on all public buildings, including the state capitol. We want to see more publications and exhibits to educate the public about Native art. And then I know that you're already considering opposing the ivory ban and initiate a public campaign about walrus ivory. That's something that has to be ongoing. We've been working with the Department of Commerce on that. We've already seen the impact on the production of ivory. When we just went through the markets where we, you know, buy art at a wholesale, we already seen that ivory art is diminishing. In conclusion, I hope I've made the point that Native art is an economic engine, and it has the potential to grow even further. It's a sustainable industry. It's a sustainable industry that can already be implemented in rural communities. You know, I sat on Sea Alaska board for many years, and one of the things that we were always looking at is how do we support economic development in our rural communities. Most of those opportunities require infrastructure, construction, access, freight, and everything. And we knew that it would be a long time in coming. But arts is something that we can develop and promote individuals, support individuals to earn an income while they are living in their rural communities. So we feel that it's important for us at all levels to be working collectively on this initiative. And we will continue to do our part in engaging government, business, academic leaders to recognize the economic power of art and to promote Northwest Coast art and Native arts in all of our media outlets. So in closing, I just might note, people have often asked, what is the difference between SHI and Sea Alaska? We are the nonprofit arm. Sea Alaska Heritage was created by the request of our elders, who said that their hands were growing weary of holding on to our culture. And what they were really saying is that they were quite aware that our children were learning about our culture in very different ways in schools and not in the clan house, and thus was the impetus for a lot of our work in the educational arena. So we work very closely with Sea Alaska. We are fortunate in that they do give us a base minimum support, but then we are obligated to go out and raise the funds to support our programs. But we do have a very close relationship. So, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Not a six-hour lecture.
Also, I do have some questions, but first I'll ask the other members of the committee if you have anything you'd like to ask.
Not yet.
Okay. So, the first question, to give us an idea of scale, about what is the what's the budget of CHI on an average year, and how much is through what are the funding streams of
you're talking about our funding sources?
Yeah, if you please.
May I ask our COO if he wants to go over that?
Of course, thank
you.
He's
got it all embedded in every little dollar that we have.
Sure. So Sea Alaska Heritage total budget is...
Please come forward, give your name and affiliation for the record, and then dive in.
Lee Kadinger, Chief Operating Officer with Sea Alaska Heritage. Mr. Chair, the annual budget of Sea Alaska Heritage is $7.2 million. And as Dr. Worrell mentioned earlier in the presentation, we have grown significantly since the creation of the Walter Sobolock building. We went from having 12 employees to approximately 40 to 42 employees right now, including which includes about 8 to 10 part-time employees. But $7.2 million, approximately 1.5 of that comes from Sea Alaska Corporation in the form of cash and in-kind services, such as IT-related assistance. The other, another large element comes from U.S. Department of Education. Approximately $4.3 million comes from U.S. Department of Education for a wide array of educational programs, whether they be math programs focused on middle school. We have another very successful program, which has won national awards from the Library of Congress, one of 13 awardees at the Library of Congress worldwide, called Baby Raven Reads. It also just won a national award for Best Picture Book for American Indian Alaska Native Picture Book Award. So that's another great program. I'm digressing a little. Other funds come from administration from Native Americans, another federally sponsored program, Margaret A. Cargill Foundation, Rasmussen Foundation. We've had funding also from Paul Allen Murdoch Foundation. We have a significant private donor base as well as corporate donor base. We've also received funding for our education programs through the State of Alaska Education Tax Credit, which I know is up for potential renewal right now. That's something that we very much support. So that overall gives a rough perspective of where all those different funds come from, but it's largely federal funds as well as corporate, individual, and foundation, a good mix.
With the chair of the education committee and the other members, we passed out the education tax credit bill, so it's on its way. So are there many, how to say it, peer organizations? Are there other Alaska Native art and heritage institutions which are growing, which are as developed, or which may become more developed?
Mr. Chair, if I could answer that. We do have a number of cultural organizations. Here in Juneau, for example, we have the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. There are some regions that have cultural organizations, and we know we have the Alaska Native Heritage Center. But I kind of like to boast a little bit in saying that we are probably the only one that focuses on art. And we are also have expanded into a number of different areas that other regions haven't gone into, like social scientific research. But one of the things that we do is we are quite aware of having a sense of responsibility to help others develop capacity, because we've seen the benefit of our work, you know, in our education. We know that as a result of our programs, our children are doing better when we integrate language and culture into the educational system. We have changed federal laws to make sure that we are getting the money rather than in the past, we've had entities from outside of Alaska who have received Native education money. So we've spent a lot of areas of effort in those areas. But I would have to say that while there are a number of different cultural organizations, they are probably not as developed as we are fortunate to have at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. And we are thinking of actually forming an association of cultural organizations so that we could work together, you know, collectively. I know when the federal government was trying to cut NEA, NEH, and IMLS, you know, I reached out to all of the other Native nonprofits to try to get them to write letters. So they are there, but probably not quite as visible as SHI.
It's true. It's hard to miss you for anyone coming downtown. Uh-huh. The Walter Sobleff building is just monumental. And if the plaza goes forward, which, by the way, I support, it'll be all the more striking. So there's, I believe it's a $500,000 capital request. What is the overall cost of that project expected to be?
So the total project cost is $8.4 million.
Okay. And it would include monumental art from the major Native cultural groups. I imagine then that you'd be contacting the other cultural groups around the state and inviting them to?
We have already made contact mm-hmm. with the different cultural groups. As I noted that we already had a statewide meeting of Native artists with the opening of our mask exhibit. We are planning to establish a statewide Native artist committee. Our work is, you know, we focus primarily in Southeast art and using Northwest Coast art kind of as the focal point. But as we move into other Native art, I mean, I think the Native Artist Park is going to allow us to really focus on other Native art. But we are already in communication with a number of different artists and regions and asking, you know, what would you want, you know, to represent your cultural group in the park?
Any questions from the other members of the committee?
Questions?
Representative Lincoln.
Deep or anything, but are these products available in Juneau if I wanted to get something for home?
You can come down to the Sea Alaska Heritage Store. Yes.
Okay.
Talk about a softball. That's.
I guess maybe less of a softball, Mr. Chair. So just these products, the MMPA still limits the hunting of sea mammals like sea otters to people with a quarter blood quantum. Is that correct?
That's true.
Okay.
Yes. We have Sea Alaska Heritage Institute conducted a study on the blood quantum issue, and our report demonstrated, you know, the changing dynamics in blood quantum among all Alaska Native groups. That report was submitted to the Alaska Federation of Natives and also to IPCOM, and I understand that there are ongoing discussions about how to approach that.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Professor Worrell. I'm in my sixth year as a legislator, and I've watched the changes to the plaza outside the Sobolev and the Sea Alaska building, and of course the construction of the Sobolev Museum. And I think it's brilliant to change that surface parking lot into an underground parking with useful space up above. Coming from Anchorage, where way too much surface real estate in downtown and midtown is devoted to parking lots, this is the way to go to make the community more welcoming and pedestrian friendly, as well as accommodating automobiles. I think that's a terrific idea.
Thank you.
So, on one of your early slides, artworks for the Southeast economy, you say Southeast Alaska arts is a $58 million industry.
Mm-hmm.
And although I'm a big fan of Formline, I'm a little bit partisan, I have to admit. What do you think, if the success of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute were replicated statewide, if all the other distinct styles of Native Alaskan art present in the state, do you have any guess, any notion of what the overall economic benefit to the state might be? How much could we gain by supporting our other forms of art, from Arctic Village to Utqiagvik to Kotzebue to Ketchikan? Well, Ketchikan's form line already. On Alaska, then.
I'm a scientist by training, and so I don't have any hard data, but I truly believe, you know, we could quadruple that statewide number there. I mean, our art is, you know, not only Northwest Coast art is significant, but, I mean, people are going back to wanting to look at handmade objects. It's become, you know, the thing to, it's become popular. It's become something that people desire in terms of wanting to look at sustainability of all of our resources. And the art of Native people is a sustainable product. And I truly believe, you know, that things like the baleen basket, things like the furs that come from the interior, even the clothing styles, I believe, you know, can have a significant economic impact. And, you know, the reason why I think it's so great for us is that it allows Native people to remain in their homeland, and they can earn an income. And I've done a lot of studies on our mixed economies in rural Alaska. I'm an anthropologist by training, and so my initial work was really studying bowhead whale hunting in the Arctic. And I could see, you know, from just the resources that we utilize in our subsistence resources, that we could, what I call, modernize our traditional economies. So I can't give you a number, but I truly believe that it could be significant. We spend a lot of time at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute working on federal laws that are barriers to our arts productions. We're very involved in trying to amend the Migratory Bird Act that forbids the use of feathers that we have used for thousands of years, and we can't understand why those feathers can be used in pillows and other kind of commercial products, but can't be used, you know, for Native arts. We're very involved in the Fur Act, other acts that are precluding us from using Native arts. And we think there has to be a change at the federal level in looking at how these communities these products can sustain Alaskans. And it's not only the artisans, you know, who are dependent or can benefit from art production. I mean, we have, for example, we know that when we were working on our sea otter project, we were supporting two tanneries. And they, each of those tanneries have a number of employees. We know that we need the infrastructure to be able to market the arts. And if you know, if you look in, at other areas like Canada, Canada did a great job in promoting Inupiat art. The Dorset, Cape Dorset prints are well known, you know, throughout. I mean, they're, I mean, you could spend several thousand dollars on one of those prints. I think our art is great. I think that we have something, you know, to really offer. And when I look at, I love Southwest art, but, you know, you could only use so much turquoise. But we have just a breadth of kind of things that we could do with our art. And I just think, I think if we were able to sit around the table and begin thinking, how can we market our native art, I think we would have a room full of excitement, and maybe from that work we can begin some hard work to monetize what that potential might be. But right now, I to answer your question, I would say that right now it's a $500 million industry. I think that we don't have to take 90 years like they did in Santa Fe to make a native artist market worldwide.
Any other questions from the other members of the committee? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just a comment. And I'm sorry I had to step out, but I just want to mention I really appreciate your opening remarks. I think you brightened everybody's day in here, so thank you very much for that. That was very refreshing.
Well, with that, the committee will, we thank you again. And if we have any further questions, we know how to get a hold of you. I've had the odd, I forgot to bring either of my Tana with me. Representative Tallarico was admiring one the other day. It's a marvelous little touch of art to bring into town. Actually, one of my staff has been good enough to bring them to me. It's so much fun to have something that a student made, you know, a ninth grader. But gosh darn if he didn't do a great job. First time we got the Tana, getting the trade beads and the bone, or my bolo tie, so much easier to put on and take off, you know, exquisitely carved by, well, a cousin, so I should declare a conflict of interest, shouldn't I? It's a family member whose work that I'm showing off on.
The Tana is a symbol of wealth and commerce and trade, so
it should be our icon, our mascot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, seeing no further questions from the committee, thank you again, Dr. Worrell, Ms. Dibdahl, Mr. Kettinger. Thanks. And
thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
And we'll certainly be in touch if there are any further questions from the members of the committee that may arise.
And come and visit Sea Alaska Heritage Walter Soboloff Building. Just let us know and we'll give you a tour.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
With that, the next item on the agenda is House Joint Resolution 30, urge U.S. support of refugees. This bill has already been heard and passed. However, we did not adopt a fiscal note at the last meeting. The joint resolution has a zero fiscal note. Is there any discussion on the fiscal note? Hearing none. Can I have a motion to adopt the zero fiscal note on HJR 30?
Mr. Chair, I move that House Community and Regional Affairs Committee adopt the zero fiscal note as a current fiscal note on the already passed House Joint Resolution 30.
The question before the committee is the adoption of the zero fiscal note. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the zero fiscal note for HJR 30 is now adopted. Onto the House Joint Resolution 30. That was the final item on the agenda. The next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, March 1st at 8 a.m. At this time, I will be canceling Thursday's meeting. Today's meeting is adjourned at 8:58 a.m.